This is an ABC podcast.
Hello, welcome to The World Today. I'm Samantha Donovan. This Wednesday, the Prime Minister heads to fire-ravaged communities in South Australia. It's a day of containment work and damage assessment in Victoria and New South Wales. And Barnaby Joyce again wades into the debate about hazard reduction burns.
I believe, and this is my view, there are too many caveats that have been placed on people, let's call them green caveats, that impede people's capacity to fight fires. Have you ever seen a footpath on fire? Well, no, because there's nothing there to burn.
But first today, Iran has launched missiles at least two air bases housing US troops in Iraq in retaliation for the death of one of its top generals. Qasem Soleimani was killed in an airstrike in Baghdad last week. The White House says it's aware of the reports on Iranian state television, but it's unclear if there have been any casualties. Our Washington correspondent Catherine Diss is monitoring the situation and she joins me now. Catherine, what do we know so far?
Well, at this stage, details are very scant, but what I can tell you is the Pentagon has confirmed that 12 ballistic missiles were launched from Iran on Iraqi bases which house US and coalition forces. Now, these rockets were fired in the early hours of the morning on at least two locations, including Iraq's Al-Asad Air Base. We also know that Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard has claimed responsibility for the attack on Iranian state TV. It's not yet clear whether there have been any injuries or fatalities, but Pentagon officials say that the Department of Defense has taken measures in recent days to try and prepare their facilities for this sort of imminent attack.
What sort of response, what else has been said in the United States or perhaps here in Australia so far?
Look, we haven't yet heard from President Donald Trump or any other senior official in America at this stage, but we do know that Secretary of Defense Mark Esper and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo have both been seen walking into the White House. While we haven't heard any sort of official press from the White House, its press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, has tweeted confirmation of the reports and that the President, Donald Trump, has been briefed and is monitoring the situation very closely. While we don't yet know how America will respond, we do know that President Trump has today and previously said he is ready to start a war and has a lot of new equipment to use. In terms of the Australian response, the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, has just released a statement. He has said he's in frequent contact with both his Chief of the Defence Force and his Defence Minister. He said he has directed his Chief of the Defence Force to take whatever action necessary to make sure that ADF members and diplomatic personnel in the country are looked after. He has also said that the National Security Committee of Cabinet has been meeting to review the situation since Saturday. And in terms of the Iranian response, it's quite interesting, Samantha. We've heard from Saeed Jalili. He's a representative to the supreme leader in Iran. He's tweeted a photo of the Iranian flag, which of course appears to be in retaliation to Donald Trump, who also tweeted a photo of his national flag after those airstrikes in Iraq.
Catherine Diss, thank you. Catherine Diss is our correspondent in Washington. Well, back home now, and the Prime Minister is visiting fire-ravaged Kangaroo Island today. Two people died there last week and more than 50 homes have been destroyed, as well as a luxury resort and other businesses. And the threat isn't over, with firefighters working hard to put in containment lines ahead of the dangerous conditions expected tomorrow. Michael Boyd is the owner of the Pandana Bay Bakery in the middle of the island, and I spoke to him a short time ago.
I think the fireys are a bit concerned about tomorrow. They're expecting pretty warm weather coming through and stronger winds, I think, tomorrow. I think Adelaide's about 40, and so I think today and last night was a fairly big backburning and trying to put control lines in. So there's been a lot of essential services people coming through this morning, and as far as I know, they're working around the clock to do their best, I think, to protect the town.
And how are locals feeling as they come in to pick up their bread? What are they telling you?
To be honest, most people are in shock. You know, we just heard of another property loss this morning. I mean, it's it's just been absolutely devastating. It's going to take a long time, I think, for the community to recover. There's a lot of people traumatised, and that's not going to change in the short term, I wouldn't have thought. Still a little bit on edge. People are a little bit frightened about what they're being told, especially with the temperature change tomorrow. You know, may be very similar to last Friday when that hot wind and 40-degree day in Adelaide went through. So I think people are a little bit spooked. I've had a lot of people in saying that they're not going to take a chance. They're packing up and maybe, you know, head to Penashore or Kingscote for tomorrow. They just really, the people we've spoken to this morning just don't want to be exposed to it.
So there are fears that other parts of the island could burn as well, Michael, or that there's still enough fuel in the areas that have already burnt out that fires will flare up again?
I think that's a worry, that with those extreme temperatures tomorrow and the possibility of maybe a northwesterly wind coming through, that there are fires still, you know, that haven't been controlled around, I'm told, Stokes Bay area. Still Flinders Chase is burning. There are some fires to the south of us as well. So I'm guessing, you know, they're very conscious of, you know, the island's only 52 kilometres wide. So if you've got fairly strong winds, it's, you know, it doesn't take a long time to, you know, to move through the island from the north to the south coast. I guess the only good news is there's massive resources here. And I was told this morning by one of the firefighters, they had a great night last night with back burning, and the conditions were quite good for that type of event. So we have got a lot of resources in and around the town. I think there's more resources coming over today.
That's good news that they might be making progress with the containment lines. The Prime Minister is due to be visiting you, Kangaroo Island, today. What do you think people want to tell him?
From the feedback, I mean, this is still ongoing and it's still very, very raw. I think this is going to be the catalyst for, it has to be the catalyst over here for change. Questions are being asked, you know, about native vegetation, you know, containment in Flinders Chase. People are, you know, like one of our employees here, you know, we're not immune to it. You know, she's lost her animals, her horses, their sheep, her house, their farm, and that's just one of many. But I think this is the catalyst. We've had, unfortunately, two deaths out the western end. Probably going to have to be the catalyst for discussions in relation to some of those acts and, you know, having that balance in our farming community, which at the moment has just been absolutely devastated.
You think people want more fuel reduction burns on the island?
Yes, 100%.
Michael Boyd, the owner of the Pandana Bakery on Kangaroo Island. Well, as we just heard there, some of those in the bushfire-affected communities are calling for more hazard reduction burns. But could they have made a difference this season? That's certainly the argument being put by some. But experts and those in charge of the firefighting efforts say this kind of fuel management isn't a panacea, and they warn that short of concreting the entire country, it's impossible to eliminate the bushfire risk. Julia Holman reports.
For months now, there's been debate raging about whether insufficient hazard reduction burns have fuelled this season's devastation. Today, high-profile backbencher Barnaby Joyce again weighed into the argument.
Have you ever seen a footpath on fire? Well, no, because there's nothing there to burn.
The Nationals MP told Channel 7 this morning that green tape is stopping preventative fire measures from taking place.
I believe, and this is my view, there are too many caveats, let's call them green caveats, that impede people's capacity to fight fires.
He's calling for more burns, tree clearing, and the development of more dams to make firefighting efforts easier in the future.
Fuel reductions, access to water, keeping roads clear, making sure we don't have tree clearing guidelines, which basically make it impossible for people to take the protective action that they need to.
But the man in charge of New South Wales's bushfire fighting efforts told the same program that Barnaby Joyce's claims that environmental restrictions are hampering efforts are not nonsense.
The environmental clearances are invariably not our problem with hazard reduction burning. Our biggest challenge with hazard reduction is the weather and the windows available to do it safely and effectively.
The New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner Shane Fitzsimmons says it's climate change that's impeding his agency's preparation.
There's no doubt that we see longer, hotter fire seasons, which then correlates with shorter periods where you typically get your safest period for burning.
Shane Fitzsimmons says while hazard reduction burns have a place, they aren't a panacea. And on the ABC this morning, he reminded viewers that these burns can be both unpopular and risky.
Let's not forget, only a matter of months ago, in New South Wales, we were public enemy number one because a byproduct of hazard reduction burning is smoke. You can't have prescribed burning, you can't have hazard reduction burning without a byproduct being smoke.
Dr. Richard Thornton is the CEO of the Bushfire and Natural Hazards CRC.
We do need to look at how we do hazard reduction burning more effectively, if you like, because we know that it's more effective if you do clearing very close to properties, for example.
He warns that no amount of fuel reduction burning can eliminate the fire risk.
Hazard reduction burning only reduces fuel. It doesn't completely remove the fuel. So no amount of hazard reduction burning, short of concreting everything, will remove all of the fuel.
Yesterday, the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, moved to shut down calls for a massive increase in fuel reduction burns. And the state's fire chief, Steve Warrington, says the debate has descended into hysteria and an emotional load of rubbish.
The reality is we've had fire down a landscape here that has had burns go right through it, and it hasn't slowed it up at all. And so the emotive argument is not supported that fuel reduction burning on a large scale will fix all our problems.
Today, the New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian wouldn't be drawn into the debate over whether there should be more hazard reduction burns.
Our focus at the moment in New South Wales is on the recovery effort. And I think everybody who has their own agenda to push should actually think about the people who we have to support at this time. Of course, we need to look at the broader issues that people are concerned about. Of course, you need to look at hazard reduction. Of course, you need to look at backburning. Of course, you need to look at climate change and weather conditions and all these other factors. That goes without saying.
At the federal level, the government announced in December a parliamentary inquiry into the impact of vegetation management policy on bushfires, which will assess, among other things, the science and research behind land clearing and hazard reduction burning.
Julia Holman reporting. This is The World Today. Containment work is continuing in New South Wales ahead of the forecast very hot and windy conditions on Friday. The damage is becoming more clear too as people get back into the hard-hit areas. Almost 1,700 homes have been lost, with another 700 damaged. Our reporter Isabel Rowe is at a community meeting in Narooma on the state's south coast, and she joins us now. Isabel, what's happening there at the moment?
So the meeting is just wrapping up. There's probably 200 or 300 people that were meeting at the Narooma Golf Club today. This is part of a bit of a hub of a really large council area called the Yorubadala Shire, and they've been totally devastated in some areas. Just driving down the Prince's Highway into this area, you go through towns like Mogo that we've heard have been basically wiped out. There's just a few buildings standing. So people are gathering here to try and find out what's in store for the next couple of days, and the mood is certainly quite tense. And of course, people are still recovering from what has been a really stressful few days. We've heard from the RSPCA, we've heard from the RFS, and the mayor of this area, Liz Innes, started by just sort of outlining to people just how badly the damage has, the fires have damaged the area.
Probably all of you are aware that I think we're up to about 380 houses out. We've had very, very limited mobile reception and internet in the northern part of the Shire. We have had absolute areas of no electricity. We are really rallying around each other as a community. There are still a lot of people that have lost everything, and going forward they are absolutely going to need every ounce of support that they can possibly get.
The Yorubadala Shire Mayor Liz Innes. And Isabel, what are people being told about the situation there over the next few days with those temperatures forecast to rise again?
Yeah, so basically people have been asked today that if you're living in an area that is rural or in the middle of bushland in the Yorubadala Shire and there's fire in the area, that you should be leaving tomorrow, so be out by the end of tomorrow ahead of Friday. So that's not a direct evacuation order, but it's something that the RFS told the crowd today that people should really consider. People were asking questions about where the worst parts of fire are, and the answer is we just don't know. Obviously, if there's a fire in your area, you need to be particularly careful. But as for conditions on Friday, there will be that wind change again, and you know, people who may have not seen fire may start seeing it. So it's really a matter of watching at the moment.
Isabel Rowe, thank you. Our reporter Isabel Rowe in Naruma. In Victoria's East Gippsland, exhausted fire crews are working tirelessly to prepare for more hot weather from tomorrow. They're setting up containment lines and trying to clear access routes so they can move quickly if the fires spread or new ones flare. Peter White is the Country Fire Authority captain in the town of Buchan, where a man was killed last week and several homes lost. He told David Sparks this campaign is unlike any he's seen in his 16 years as a volunteer firefighter.
Doing all the containment lines at the moment just for Buchan South. That's one of our biggest threatened areas. And also up the top around Woolgoolmerang and Sugambugan up there as well. They've got all the other fires coming down the hill from New South Wales area, the Cabungra fire and all that coming down this way as well.
What's involved in setting up a containment line? I mean, we hear that a lot in the media, but I think a lot of people wouldn't understand that.
Yeah, containment lines is just a mineral earth break basically on an existing road, so where we just widen it and treat all the hazardous trees. So if the fire does come through that area, we can get in there a lot quicker because there's no hazardous trees to fall on the firefighters, which makes the firefighting easier. And stopping the spread of fire, but also creating access so we can actually get in there to deal with the fire after it's gone through.
And would you use, like, earth-moving machinery, chainsaws?
Yeah, it's done with all harvesters, excavators, graders, dozers.
How hard do you think the next Friday, Saturday are going to be?
Friday's a bit of a spike day with the northwesterlies winds coming through. Yeah, it just depends on where the fire is and if it takes a run. That's the hardest part, but we're preparing for it. We've got crews up there blacking out everywhere. We've got two strike teams in here today, blacking out all areas that could be potential for fire to get out of where it is inside the containment lines. And some of the fire isn't inside containment lines, so it's just a matter of we have to wait and see, unfortunately. But we're doing our best.
I think you said you've been with the CFA here for 16 years. How does what you've seen over the last week, more than a week now, compare with the 16 years that you've been doing this here?
Oh, the 16 years and all the campaign fires we've been through in this area. This year is unpredictable. We've had hardened firefighters that do firefighting all the time. But I'm in the same boat, just looking at the fire situation and where the fire's coming from. This year, you just cannot pick where it's going. It's just a horrendous year for dryness.
And I guess you would have got up close and personal with these fires, like your crew did. I mean, describe what they look like physically at their most intense when you're up there.
Well, the other night we had the smoke column collapse on top of us, and it was just like raining virtually embers, but like hail. So it was just incredible the amount of work we had to do. I own log cabins here. We've got 10 cottages, and we managed to save all those and everything in the main street and everything like that. So it was just an amazing effort.
For those of us who have never been in that situation, do you see large flames, or are you just surrounded by black smoke, or what?
Oh, no, it's large flames everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, the cave reserve, the Buchan Caves Reserve over there, we had fire tornadoes at about 100 metres high in it. So it was incredible. It just, you'd never ever see it again in your lifetime.
Peter White, the CFA captain in the town of Buchan in East Gippsland, speaking to David Sparks. Professional and volunteer firefighter associations in four states want a royal commission into the bushfire disaster. They say it's essential that Australia is better prepared to prevent and respond to similar situations in the future. But the organisations representing Victorian firefighters haven't joined the campaign. Tim Skelton reports.
The unions that represent firefighters in New South Wales, WA, South Australia and Queensland, along with the New South Wales Volunteer Firefighters Association and the state's Public Service Association, are banding together to call for a royal commission into the bushfire crisis. They argue Australia wasn't as prepared for the crisis as it should have been, and a royal commission is the right tool to identify the problems that need to be fixed. Leighton Drury is the secretary of the New South Wales Fire Brigade Employees Union.
These things take time to set up, and we're 9 months out, possibly the next fire season. You know, royal commissions or any investigation can go for a long time, so we should start them as soon as we can and start collecting the data, start investigating how we can make these so our communities are safer than what they are now.
But the Victorian branch of the United Firefighters Union and Volunteer Fire Brigades Victoria are notably absent from today's announcement. Peter Marshall is the Victorian Secretary of the UFU and the organisation's National Secretary. He says the timing is inappropriate.
I just don't think it's a time for criticism. For this reason, there is certainly will be a time for reflection. But as we are speaking, there are firefighters out there fighting fires that haven't been home for a considerable period of time. They are the people who are actually on the front line. We really need to hear from them.
He testified at the 2009 Black Saturday Royal Commission and says it's not something that governments should rush into.
Anyone who appears before an inquiry or a Royal Commission is going to be the people who are actually out there fighting the fire or making decisions in relation to the deployment of resources or additionally the community members who have suffered loss. I think that in the context of having lived a Royal Commission and seeing the trauma involved in that, I think that that needs to be carefully considered.
Professor Leslie Hughes is an ecologist and an expert in the impact of climate change from Macquarie University. She says a Royal Commission would be a useful way to collate all the science governments need to make the right policy decisions.
On things like climate change, on things like hazard reduction, on other things like planning regulations and resources available for firefighting, having all of that information in the one place would have the advantage of allowing a sober judgment of evidence and some useful recommendations.
The Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, says he'll consider establishing a Royal Commission at the end of the summer fire season. That's still several months away. Professor Leslie Hughes says the government can and should start making changes now.
Tim Skelton with that report. Well, it's not only fire occupying the country's emergency services this week. On Monday, Cyclone Blake hit the Kimberley coast, and tonight a tropical low weather system in the Arafura Sea is expected to develop into a cyclone. Forecasters are warning communities in northern Australia to take care and plan, but they're also watching the weather systems for another reason. They say the huge amounts of moisture being generated by these storms in the north could lead to huge downpours down south. Oliver Gordon reports.
At this time of the year, it's not unusual for tropical cyclones to form in the waters off the northwestern coast of the continent. Despite this, warnings like this from the Bureau of Meteorology forecaster Jude Scott are worth paying attention to.
The weather impacts from this system will be dangerous. We're expecting to have gale force winds in the region of 90 kilometres per hour, and that could be sustained over a great deal of hours during early on Friday morning and throughout the day.
A tropical low known as Claudia is currently moving east of Cape Wessel, a small group of islands off the Northern Territory coast. It's expected to start tracking west before developing into a tropical cyclone tonight.
It'll then spend 24 hours on the open water, where there's a good chance that we'll see it intensify to a Cat 2 system, and is expected to make landfall between Maningrida and Goulburn Island sometime early in the early hours of Friday morning.
These places are about 500 kilometres east of Darwin and have seen their fair share of cyclones. Despite this, emergency services are urging residents of the small communities that may be impacted to take precautions. For Bureau of Meteorology tropical climate expert Greg Browning, those in the north facing these conditions should take care. But there could be a greater good to be found in these weather events, an increased chance of substantial rain down south.
So you still want to obviously be really careful, and you don't want to be outside when the peak winds are coming through. But in a broader sense, it's probably the rainfall is going to, the positives associated with the rainfall are going to outweigh any negatives regarding the wind damage.
He says the increased moisture in the air this weather is creating has a lot to do with a system called the Indian Ocean Dipole. It has recently shifted from a positive phase to a neutral phase, and that's something our thirsty country should welcome.
With the influence of the positive Indian Ocean Dipole that's been dominating Australia for some time, we really just haven't seen much moisture around the continent at all. So this is really the first time since that developed in about the middle of the year that we have this opportunity for some widespread moisture to move over the continent and potentially see some good rainfall over most parts of the continent at some stage.
His message to those in the southeast of the country struggling with fire conditions?
We're starting to see a significant amount of moisture move over the continent, which is something we haven't seen for probably a good 6 months.
Greg Browning from the Bureau of Meteorology, ending Oliver Gordon's report. And that's the world today for this Wednesday. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow with more stories from across Australia and around the world. I'm Samantha Donovan. Have a good afternoon.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.